You're watching Fanboy Versus with your hosts, JD Church, Nicole Hale, Chris Triplett, and Chris McFeely.
And you are watching Fanboy Versus. I am your host, JD, joined this week, just like last week and the week before that, by Nicole Hale and Chris McFeely.
Hi.
Hello, hello.
Hi.
What up?
Yo. So, this week, we again have no Chris Triplett. He will be played by a parental advisory sticker because it is Fanboy versus risque content.
Yow.
We are going to be talking about Saga. And, wow. Let me just preface that and say that
there are any children in the room,
sometime
between now and about an hour's time, just send them off to bed.
Right. We are going to be talking about some adult content.
Oh my gosh.
Adult content in distressing situations.
I think I learned some things from this comic, and that says something. So
I learned that you could blush even if you're in your place even by yourself. No one else is around.
That's right. You could be in that bathroom alone by yourself, and you could still be like, oh my.
That's the kind of comic that you look over your shoulder just to make sure no one's there when you're reading it.
Yeah, right.
That you want to read on, you know, reading a comic book in public day, you know?
Don't read this on the bus.
Yeah, don't, do not take that to work. No.
Yeah.
No. So,
but that doesn't mean it's not good.
Oh, no. That's the thing. It's like, it's a very...
Just in case anybody's thinking we're going to, like, be trashing something shocking later.
Oh, no.
This runs the gamut.
And
but that's at the end of the show.
And it is totally fair play, too. You know, there is not, like, any kind of favoritism for one body type to another, you know. So, anyway, we'll talk about that. But what we'll talk about now is news things, because we want to get those out of the way. So, Chris McFeely then, sir, what is it?
Yep.
What has happened? What's going on?
Not a heck of a lot. Not a heck of a lot has happened. In the realms of small bits of news, DC has announced there's going to be another Nielsen survey to... you know, just track the continuing progress of the New 52. You may remember they did one of these in comic stores back when the New 52 launched. There's going to be another, so you can go and participate in that if you'd like. There's really nothing more to say about it right now, just that's out there. And if you want to have, if you have any issues you want aired, go and, you know, vote actively. What else happened this week? The early reviews for Amazing Spider-Man are starting to creep in through European review publications, and they are all positive.
Good.
Yes.
That's good.
It's not coming out here any earlier.
Did you see the poll that I put on last week? I put a poll on last week to see if more people are excited about Spider-Man or Batman.
Oh, I did.
Spider-Man was in the lead for the longest time, but then all those Batman fans
caught wind of it. Yeah, no, it's definitely Spidey for me, but that's not next week, but the week after, and it's very early. I mean, I don't know what the release date is in America, but I believe it's coming out on the 3rd.
I've got my tickets for next Sunday night. Thank you.
Oh, wow.
Ooh, Sunday. Okay, well, that is very early then. That's earlier than...
Well, it's Monday at midnight, so I leave here to go
because it's that's 4th of July week, then it's coming out, so...
That's why it's
I remember
out.
The TV ads I saw for it over here saying the 3rd of July, and that's really weird, because that's a Tuesday, but whatever.
Yeah. It's, I mean, like, for here, I mean, that's the day before the 4th of July.
Yeah, but you have an excuse, like, they're just throwing it out on a Tuesday over here because what?
Right. Well, you know, because we like,
Americans
occasionally,
are
yeah. occasionally we like to remind you all, we kind of whooped your ass. Couple hundred years ago. I think we did that twice. But anyway.
Irish.
So, well, no,
we came over there fine in your country.
We waited till y'all came over here to whoop your ass. And then
we just made you change your name.
Right. We just like insulted your heritage and like made you work horrible jobs. Because that's what we do in America to immigrants. My family's Irish, so I can't say.
Anyway.
Anyway.
That's happening.
So that's the thing that's going on. Spider-Man.
A lot of talk from the reviews, without spoilers, that it seems to put a lot of emphasis on the romance element, and I think that's good.
Yeah, that's fine. I think,
I'm okay with that. That's good, you know. I'm looking forward to it. Although I'm thinking about digging out the Raimi movies and rewatching them all before. Not quite the same as watching all the Avengers movies beforehand. But
for those of y'all in the States, I was reading on Best Buy this morning that they've got a deal where it's like you can get $10 off of the movie plus $10 per Blu-ray for the three Raimi movies.
Damn, that's not bad.
So that is not bad. $30 for all three Raimi movies on Blu-ray? That's nice. I might have to go do that. So,
sticking with movies, the trailer for Dread came out this week. No, you're doing your Sylvester Stallone impression.
Oh, yeah. He's not in this one.
This is the new Judge Dredd movie based on the 2000 AD British comic character, previously probably best known to Americans as the subject of the Sylvester Stallone movie from the 90s, starring Rob Schneider. And
oh, why can't we forget that?
One of its major failings. One of many. So the trailer's out, and I quite like the look of it, I have to say.
I'm a little concerned that it seems to be the entire premise of the film is the slow motion action shots.
There's an awful lot of slow mo in there, isn't there?
Yeah, I'm kind of like, really? Is it 2000? Is it like 98, 99? Because that's what, you know, it's like somebody was in a time capsule like after the second Matrix movie came out, and then they decided to like make this movie.
It's also very unfortunately timed because its premise, which is that Dredd is, you know, locked inside a skyscraper or a city block, as they call them, in Judge Dredd, a mega block, climbing up to the top and fighting all the scum on the way up is also the premise of the recent action movie The Raid.
Oh.
So comparisons are going to be unfortunately unavoidable.
I hadn't even heard of that movie, so I feel okay.
I believe it's Korean.
Oh, well.
But it was released, you know, in places.
Not in the States, though. We don't watch that stuff over here. We do not watch things with subtitles or that aren't in English. So I don't think that would be a concern over here.
I'm just confirming its origins.
So the city block things, that's like in SimCity, right? When you got to the end part of the game and you had the big things that you put... No? SimCity 2000? Anybody?
I'm not touching that one. No.
Okay.
It's Indonesian.
Oh, Indonesian? That's even worse. We definitely wouldn't watch that here.
No, actually, maybe that's not correct. No, SWAT? No, okay, that does seem to be it, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, just confirming that. Yeah, it doesn't seem to have... Yeah, I suppose that's not going to be much of an issue with Americans from the looks of things.
We wouldn't even know that movie existed.
I don't think you may have had it. But the British, who are the people who will actually be paying attention to this film... yeah.
Hey, there's stuff blowing up, and...
There's a curious sort of... It's kind of odd-looking, this film, though.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the way I've described it is that it has a very proto Dredd sort of look. It almost looks like a prequel to Dredd, you know?
That's what I felt like when I was watching it.
It takes place somewhere between now and the crazy future of the comics, you know? It's like the judge's armor is more like conventional body armor instead of the ornate outfits that, you know, they wear in say the Stallone film, you know. Mega City 1, although sprawling, is still quite is you know, peppered with only a few blocks quite spaced out instead of like entirely being made up of blocks packed together. And it's a small sort of crime story. It's not the usual kind of craziness, time-traveling, chainsaw-handed, dinosaur man sort of crimes that Judge Dredd often deals with.
Well, that's unfortunate.
Dredd, you can do anything with Dredd because they really do milk the far future setting to do anything they feel like in the comics, you know, and you can't have crazy stuff like that. It just seems to be telling a Dredd story rather than the Dredd story, which is at least what the Stallone movie set out to try and do, incorporating the Mean Machine and Rico and Dredd's origin and everything, and just putting the... it's an odd one, but...
It's one of those deals where it's like, it has... I mean, that's difficult to do, and I can, And maybe, I don't know if it's like an American audience thing or it's just the way the movies are now. It's almost like maybe it's trying to fall between the lines and not be so much of like a superhero comic book movie and try to be a little more down to earth and accessible.
Oh, well, no, I mean, that's definitely what it is. But it's, I think that that is, they've very deliberately taken that approach to distance it from the Stallone film.
Right. Yeah, and I think so too. I mean, yeah, because...
But it's ironic that it comes at a time then whenever comic book films are actively trying to distance, actively not doing that.
I mean,
and just going crazy bright, just putting the comics up on the screen as we've seen with the Avengers franchise. They're not afraid to just do the crazy.
Yeah.
But it's a scaled back, real worldy sort of early X-Men, Nolan, Batman sort of approach.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's that. Yeah, it's that pre sort of modern version of what they've done, you know, where we are with like, it is in that sort of more comfortable version of superhero. I don't know how much they need to distance it from the previous Dredd movie. I mean, I think if you ask 10 people to tell you something about the previous Judge Dredd movie, I think the most that they would be able to come up with is the I'm the Law line.
Most people would probably know it from Scrubs more than anything else.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't think they would really have much concept of the movie itself or what happened in it. So I don't know how much they need to dust it. I think this is more of that world in which some parts of Hollywood haven't caught up yet, and they're still in, like you say, like the Nolan Batman sort of world, where it's like, we've got to make this more down to earth and natural. And then Avengers is over there going, no, that's cool.
No, we got to Hulk.
Watched it again last night.
No, we're going to do Hulk smash and mutant
scroll
things.
I
got to
tell you, though, no, I'm the Law is having, from the trailer, has a very similar effect on me as Hulk Smash.
Oh, yeah.
In the Avengers trailer. Ma's not the Law. I'm the Law.
Yeah.
Shooting! And I was like, you know, I did go, and it happened, you know.
Well, and I wonder if that's an effect, too, because I don't know how much penetration there is in terms of, like, you know, Judge Dredd and that world in terms of even the American psyche. I think probably that was something that's
very
a little
little.
More...
It's, again, the Stallone film. Yeah. I am the law! Pull down your weapon! You are under! No. Urban's got it. Carl Urban playing Dredd. He's got it. And he's got the whole chin going on there as well. I mean, Stallone wore the suit very well, but I'm amazed at just how much Carl Urban appears to have torn Judge Dredd's chin from a comic and stuck it to his own face.
He's good.
Perpetual frown, just like it doesn't look like a person's mouth that goes down that far.
He's very malleable in film. Yeah. I mean, you know. Pick the probably three main movies that he's been in, and it's like, how do you tell the difference between the guy?
I mean, I don't know him very well. I just know him mainly from Star Trek. But...
Well, he was in Lord of the Rings too.
Yes, well,
and that's what I'm saying. It's like you would not associate these three characters with each other, just looking at them, you know, face to face. It's not like, you know, a more prominent actor in that way. I mean, I'm not saying he's not a great actor. He is, but he's not like, you know, well associated with a lot of different films, but the stuff that he's done is so different that's why you don't associate them with him, you know, with one film to the next. So, Star Trek, that's good too. Anyway,
it would also require me to give a shit about Lord of the Rings.
Well, that's true too. Funny story about that. I'll tell in the post show. But anyway, there's a troll on the Hobbit IMDb this week that was just hilarious.
I was wondering what that was up with, because it was all gone by the time I saw it.
Yeah, I tried to link to it. Oh, I guess I can tell the story real quick. So there's a troll on the IMDb for the Hobbit film that basically went on there and said that he didn't understand. You know, he was feeling ripped off because he felt like the Lord of the Rings that Tolkien just ripped off Harry Potter. And he went through and listed all of the characters from Lord of the Rings that were ripped off from Harry Potter. And then, like, ended it up by saying he didn't understand why Tolkien was doing this Hobbit prequel, why he didn't just write it to begin with. But he had just gotten some of the new Lord of the Rings DVDs, and he was going to listen to it to see if Tolkien talked about it on the commentary. And of course, people went like ape shit and all pissed off about it. And I'm like, dude, he's a troll.
It was so
Come
funny.
On.
It was so funny.
That's just, that's priceless stuff, man. Come on. So, yeah. But apparently, people thought the guy was an idiot. I'm like, no, he's a really, that's a decent troll thing. That's awesome. Anyway. But I thought that was pretty funny.
Well done to that gentleman.
So, hats off to you, sir, wherever you are. Brian 007 was his name. Anyway, moving on. Other news?
There's just one last thing for the absolutely inexplicable files, which is not content with merely baffling everyone by releasing a miniseries by James Robinson and Billy Tan. DC and Mattel are also going for some digital-only Masters of the Universe comics.
What?
yeah. The really? First one is written by Jeff Johns.
No, you're lying. You're making that shit up.
I'll now tell you exactly why. No, I don't follow Masters of the Universe, okay. But I did hear, I think it was out of Toy Fair or whatever the last show we saw Little Toys at was, that one of the upcoming classic figures was Sir Laserlot.
No.
And I'm like, I don't know who Sir Laserlot is, but that sounds about right, that name, you know. You know who Sir Laserlot is? You know who Sir Laserlot is?
Oh, God, I'm scared.
Sir Laserlot is Jeff Jones' fan character that he created when he was 8 years old.
Oh, my God. Is this going to be like a crossover with Molar or something? I mean,
he's getting a toy, and he's the star of the first mini-comic. And there's going to be another one in July about by Mike Costa about Battle Cat, and then another one by Kyle Higgins about Man at Arms later in that. And I guess they're gonna keep doing them, and I'm like, really? Okay.
I mean, give it to DC for really though experimenting in the digital frontier, because they're gonna have this. They've got the season 11 for Smallville going on. You know, they're
a bunch of stuff in the digital.
Yeah, they're really jumping into the digital. I mean, to go along with, you know, a lot of their stuff being, you know, same day digital. So, I mean, why not go that way? It's going to be cheaper than trying to print it, you know. And who's
going
to
probably going to get it into the hands of more? It's a rare instance where this is probably actually going to get it into the hands of more Masters of the Universe collectors.
Sure. Because they're
now they can just buy it from.
Because they wouldn't have to leave.
You know, people who
their
might
homes.
Not track all. People who may not be comic book collectors who have no reason to go to the comic store and maybe aren't going to go across town or drive for hours to get their one comic. I would say that there is the potential for this to reach a larger audience than the print. Because now all Masters of the Universe. I mean, I'm told it's grim, dark, modern DC Drek, but I haven't read it myself.
Well, I think
it's out now, by the way. If you want to read this, this is out now.
Oh, really? Really? Oh, I'll do that now. Oh. I'll do that today. Heck yeah. I want to check it out. I mean, that's the thing is I have a peripheral interest in it, you know.
It's a new number one. I'll have to go check it out.
There you go.
I'm a sucker for number ones.
But, you know, yeah, I mean, I think that's probably a more cost-effective way to go, if nothing else. Because I think they would lose their ass trying to get that printed and get people to buy it.
A supporting Masters of the Universe.
What? I mean, what shop in their right mind is going to buy more than three copies of that, you know? I mean, seriously. But you're right. I think they can sell a lot more through the digital than they would lose to the cost of printing. So, awesome. That's cool. I, you know, like I said, I'm encouraging DC to do this because I think it's exploring some different avenues, especially for things that are not going to appeal to the wider comic book audience. Mm. So therefore,
this is definitely one of the best routes to take digital.
Yeah. There are things
while it's still in this early experimental stage. You know?
Well, and I think too, the thing is like this is just like you say, this is stuff that's not going to be taking away from the local comic book shops.
Mm. It's like you look at the other things that we're going like they've got Smallville season 11, Arkham Unhinged based on the video games is happening there. You know,
These
are things which have a broader audience of people who may not be, and indeed probably a much larger portion of the viewing audience are not. People who normally go to a comic shop may not even know they have one locally, may not know how to get to it if they do have one. And so, you know, this does put this in their hands, metaphorically speaking.
Right.
Because it's not in your hands, because it's not real, because you can't have it, and I don't want it because you can't.
Well, it puts it in the e-reader that's in your hands.
Yeah.
Sort of. So that's awesome. Cool deal. Well, good to know. I'll have to check that out later. So cool. Very good. And that's it. That's all the news.
Yep. That's all of
there
the...
There we go.
I'm going to have to check that out. I'm going to definitely have to check that out.
I'll pull it up on my Kindle Fire here a little bit after the show.
You with your technology.
You should do it now and do a live review.
Well, I'm going to nod and say I did.
Aww.
Yeah. So, but hey, Nicole jumped into the 21st century. What,
yeah, yesterday? I got a smartphone.
What'd you get?
Oh, I got the new Nokia Lumia 710.
Okay. Nope. Yeah. Is that an Android or?
It's a smartphone. It's not an Android, but look how pretty it is.
Is it like a BlackBerry or?
No, it's just the new. It's like the new Nokia version of the iPhone. It's smaller.
The pronunciation amuses me.
What? Nokia?
But it's
I know
not,
that's how Americans so actually pronounce it, but it's
is it a Windows phone? It's got to be one of the. It's got to be.
I don't know what the actual Finnish pronunciation of it is or anything, but I know Americans pronounce it Nokia, but all the ads over here call it Nokia.
Yeah. Well, that doesn't.
No, it's the new Windows phone.
Okay, it's Windows. That's what I was gonna say. It's either Windows or Android. So that's what I was trying to.
That's the new Windows phone, and I'm loving it.
Sweet. So there you go. Nicole's now.
Because
joined
my
us.
Last note. Nokia, I had for 3 years, bit the dust this week.
Yeah, I'm about ready to upgrade my Galaxy S to the Galaxy S3, so I'm very excited about that. Anyway, enough tech for this show.
Yeah, this comes with its own, like, Siri S kind of thing, so yeah.
Ooh. All right, so then it is time for recommendations.
Woohoo!
So, Nicole, what do you have for
okay.
us?
Okay! Well, I've got a new number one, like I was telling you. I actually got two IDWs I'm going to be recommending. The first one is Mars Attacks, because I love Mars Attacks. I love the movie. I love anything cheesy, 60s alien. But I was just like, okay, I'm going to pick this up. I'll probably be disappointed with how cheesy it was. And I was surprised how entertained I was. It's like a bunch of misunderstandings that leads to a war, like the Hatfields and McCoys. So basically what happens is the Martians are just observing the planet, but something goes wrong with their spaceship and it hits our spaceship that's in orbit. And then it just leads to a comedy of errors. The spaceship comes flying down to Earth. A bunch of hillbillies finds it. They sell the alien to a circus. And one hillbilly goes back and tries to rescue him. And all this, and it just goes out of control. And then just like this little thing that happens, and it blows up, and there's a huge war. I love it.
Wow.
So cool. Yeah, so, I mean, you kind of feel sorry for the Martians. You're just like, wait. We were just being good guys. And then the one survivor got all the team up to come back down to Earth, and that's how the war starts. So.
Now, this is an ongoing series, right?
It is. It is an ongoing series. And
who's the creative team on it?
I'm loving this. It is written and lettered by John Layman, art by John McCrea, and
colored
by
John
McCrea. John McCrea, sorry.
John
McCrea,
fellow Northern Irish, sure.
Yeah. And Andrew Elder did the colors. So, yeah, it's a lot of fun. I mean, and then they have, like, just, like, these little postcards in between, like, different pages of kind of, like, if
the Martians were to send postcards back at home. They have like these little postcards in here, and it's really cool. And the art, love the art. The details of the Martians, the details of all the humans is just great. There's a couple little violent parts, but nothing as bad as I've seen before. But it's so much fun. I cannot wait to pick up the next one. The only problem is, and if you guys saw me tweet about this, if you're a collector of covers, you're screwed. There's 58 covers plus three retailer incentives.
I know that the trick with this is that there is a cover for every card in the original Mars Attacks greeting card set that inspired the film and the franchise. Like, and each cover is just a recreation of that card's artwork.
Mm-hmm. And I got number 23.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they have the pictures of all the different covers, and they're like, oh, that's some cool stuff. But this was so much fun. I'm not kidding. It's definitely probably in my top, like, number ones I've read all year. Probably in the top three. It's just so much fun.
Nice.
Yeah. And the next one I'm recommending is the one that made me cry this week. Now, if you guys are Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle fans, you'll know why. This is part of the micro series. It's kind of like a spotlight on all the individuals. And this week was Splinter. And you're just like, okay, so what's with Splinter? He talks about his time when he was Hamato Yoshi, when he had his previous life as a human, and his growing up, his coming of age, him as a teenager, how he fell in love, his family life, how the war started with Splinter back in a previous time. But it's a great little love story, and it's very sad. It does not have a happy ending. But you find out with Splinter, he's supposed to be this calm and collect creature, but you find out he still has hatred for Splinter. For Shredder. And he has a good reason why, and he's still trying to suppress that hatred, but he can't. He cannot let it go. And so if you're a person that likes the whole, I guess, samurai training, it's really a good story. Again, but this is more of a love story than anything.
So. Well, I know that's what, Tang Shan, isn't it?
What was that?
Tang Shan, story.
Oh, yes, it has his wife's story in it. And it's very, very sad because it's just like he finally gets the love that he wants, and it doesn't last.
That is the traditional Splinter origin. Except, no, but the IDW continuity follows cartoon, the original, the 80s cartoon version where Splinter was Yoshi rather than being Yoshi's pet rat, right?
Yes, it is him. Back in one of the first issues, they talked about Splinter had a previous life along with his four boys, which are the Turtles, and they've somehow been reincarnated into these mutants.
And really?
So he's starting to get these visions back of his previous life. And that's why he's out seeking revenge, because he realizes that Shredder, Oroku Saki, he remembers what he did to him and his family, and now he's out for it.
So Shredder is still Saki and is still alive. So we're not talking centuries ago or anything.
No, it's centuries ago, but he's starting to remember from those centuries of when they were actually teenagers together and trained.
But is it centuries? I mean, so is Saki?
It is. Mm-hmm.
Saki is reincarnated as well, then?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yep.
Wow, and we thought the aliens was going to be hard to, like, you know.
No, but grasp. The way that this story is told, it's perfect. It makes you believe that something is going down. He deserves his revenge, and he's going to come out and get it. And you're just like, you're rooting for Splinter. You're just like, yay! Because this is such a good story. If you just pick up one, pick this up. I mean, it's not even more mutant-centric. It's
back in the past, all humans and the war. It's just, oh, it's so good.
Curious.
Highly recommend this one. Yes, for sure.
Nice.
All right.
Very cool. Okay.
My two recommendations.
There's your two. Very good. All right. So, I'm gonna have two that I'm gonna talk about as well. One is gonna be a cautionary tale. So we've been talking about the before Watchmen, and you know, we had the first two from Darwin Cook doing most of, you know, doing sort of the, at least the art, or no, I'm sorry, doing the writing on those, art on one, and we talked about how, you know, it really adhered to the sort of Watchmen style, and you know, felt like it was just trying to expand on the pieces between the world. And that it fit very well into that world. And then the comedian happened. I think we're definitely, it has some connecting thematic elements, like the music and things, but as far as, like, one, trying to adhere to, like, the panel structure, those kinds of things are different. I mean, it's filling in story that there's not necessarily story for one way or the other, but it's definitely not. It's definitely a departure from like the books that the previous two. I mean, that we've read.
Yeah, yeah. Well, this is by a different writer. So.
Correct. I mean, it's Azzarello.
This is Azzarello and Eduardo. No, J.G. Jones is on the
Jones,
art.
Yeah.
One, isn't he?
Yeah, sorry, and the art's fine. I mean, I thought the art was, you know, the art is really good. It's just a different deal. Part of the story in here is revolving around, you know, it's based obviously in what, 63, which is a very interesting conversation between the comedian and Jackie. Oh.
Kennedy.
It's like, man, that woman's far more interesting than
her husband.
And then at least we were led on by the public.
I mean, this issue is riffing on the implication in the ancillary material of Watchmen that the comedian might have been responsible for assassinating JFK. And something that the film actually just did in its opening montage. It showed the comedian killing JFK. Well, this one is here to say, no.
Yeah, and so I don't know how I feel about that. I mean, I know that the film part was like was making it clear, and the book was much more.
It just hinted at it.
It hinted at it. I mean, there's even a hint from some of the things that comedian himself said. But I don't know how I feel about this whole last scene. I'm not going to say what happens, but that was very odd for me. Like,
it's obviously riffing on what happens with Comedian and that character in Watchmen itself.
Right.
And it shows you where there might be a point of, you know, like a shared point in their history, which would perhaps prompt you to understand why Comedian went to that character when he did in Watchmen. But it's very heavy-handed.
Yeah. It took me out of the world, I think, is the thing that I can say.
Get it, yeah.
So I don't want to say don't read this, but I'm going to say that if you're on the fence and you're like, man, I don't know if I really want all of these books, this is probably skippable, you know, because I don't know if it's really going to add to.
Yeah, that's out of the three. Minuteman feels like we're going to learn more about how these guys came together and how they worked together. They are all but blank slates, you know. Silk Spectre is going to tell us the story of how Silk Spectre finally, you know, went through a teenage rebellion phase and finally accepted and agreed to be what her mother was trying to sculpt her into. You know, Comedian's a bastard here, and he's a bastard, you know, even internal to Watchmen itself. He's a bastard when he's a young hero, and he's a bastard in his old age. I know we're going to get a story in this where he is maybe not a bit of a bastard for a while, but then loops back around to being a bastard again. There's no story to put in here.
I mean, and that's the whole that's the whole reason that the comedian dies at the beginning of Watchmen 2, because he's not really a character.
Watchmen 2, Electric Boogaloo?
Yeah. But that's why he dies. You know, it's one of the reasons I think that you can lose that character and not have to have that character around, because he really represents something rather than being something. He represents...
He's not a good person.
No. No. Not at all.
Death is about as much as he deserved.
I mean, and, you know, he had all of the human moments I think that character ever needed to have were on the page.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
to try
yeah.
to interject these, I think, takes away from the character. I think it, you know, I think it tries to add something that's completely unnecessary. You know, if they were going to try to do, you know, do maybe the story, I mean, could be, because it ended up in a completely different place than where I started out, you know, thought it would start out. Because when it started out, I was like, oh, this is going to be awesome. Because then it's
you
gonna...
feel like you know where it's going.
Yeah,
right?
And then it goes in a completely different direction in
almost
not a good way.
No, yeah, almost for no other reason than to go, ah, you thought that was going to happen, but it didn't.
Right, and it's like, well, that's not fair at all. You know, there's a lot of times where I like that. I did not like it in this instance. So, and that's what I'm saying. It's just not... I think if you're on the fence, if you don't want to get the whole set, you might want to skip that one. You know, I don't think it's gonna cause warm fuzzies if you're a real hardcore Watchmen fan.
So you will miss out on the Curse of the Crimson Corsair.
Oh well, yes, you will, won't you? I skipped that part because I was trying to get through comics. So I need to go back and read. I glanced at it, but. But actually, what I am going to recommend is something that I am not, a series that I'm not currently reading, but I think it's important to point out because we've referenced everything else from it, which is the epilogue to Ends of the Earth, which is in Avenging Spider-Man. And my shop was even commenting that they missed out on a deal because they could have just stuck Avenging in for everybody that buys Amazing. And I pulled the last one off the shelf when I went in today, so I got lucky I even got this. But...
I mean, see, the trick of this is, this is actually partially written by Slott. Mm-hmm. It's not like the Ends of the Earth one-shot that came out there, which basically wasn't about Spider-Man and contributed nothing to the story. And this doesn't contribute much to the Ends of the Earth. I think you maybe the, you go on to tell us what this story primarily consists of.
When we left Ends of the Earth. You know, at the end of that, and I don't know if we gave that away when we talked about it, but we can talk about it now, which was that at the end of it, you know, one of the things that we had talked about that we knew, what we had figured was going to happen is that Doc Ock had sort of promised death for Rhino, because that's pretty much all Rhino had left to do at that point. And at the end of it, you know, he's fighting, Rhino's kind of fighting Spider-Man and Sable. And Sable basically sort of sacrifices herself, and you see her kind of go under the water so that Spider-Man can go on and save the day. And, of course, that really effed with Spider-Man because, you know, his whole thing has been no one dies. And, you know, so I think a lot of us thought that out of this book we would have that kind of moment at the end where it's like, oh, no, she's okay, everything's fine. I don't know. But this story is actually more of a flashback story in which Spider-Man talks about an early team-up between him and Sable and Doctor Strange. It's a fun story. I mean, and it's bookended by Spider-Man working with the Avengers on, like, the search crew, and they're trying to find Sable.
I mean, the whole story is just it's a flashback story to, I don't know, when the comic would have, I guess it would have been late 80s, early 90s, sort of, in real-world time, just to a team-up between Silver Sable, Doctor Strange, and Spidey back then, with like, a couple pages of bookends.
Some girl ends up betrothed to Doctor Doom, and in order to break the spell thing, because she's got all these magical properties, she has to marry a guy that she loves, which she tells them is Spider-Man, but then she gets pissed that Spider-Man's not, like, ultimately powerful, and she gets mad that she doesn't actually get to marry her real love, which is David Tennant, apparently. And so, anyway, that's all stuff that happened. Am I wrong? Come on, this is like that. Someone like totally pulled Doctor Who out of this guy.
Hang on a minute, look at them.
Look at the full wedding page and tell me that they did not rip off David Tennant for that.
Oh, you're right. Oh my God.
Yeah.
You actually, yeah, wow, I never even noticed, but you're...
Blue shirt, pinstripes, the shoes,
there.
I mean, the hair.
Oh, yeah. God, so much of
you didn't
hair.
Notice that? I'm so, wow.
I really didn't. I didn't notice it.
I'm impressed with myself. Yeah. Oh, no, I looked at that. I was like, oh, my God, it's David Tennant.
That is David Tennant.
Well,
Rock's
you just sold
slightly
another
itties
like
there.
2 dozen copies from Fangirls because you said that.
Yeah, I know. I know. We just sold 15 copies of Avenging Spider-Man. But you know,
David Tennant lookalike in it.
Yeah, it has a David Tennant lookalike. Some girl. So anyway, but I mean, and that's kind of a fun story. I mean, there's some great Spider-Man moments in it because at one of the points, like, they had sort of convinced Spider-Man, and they'd never really convinced him. He just sort of ended up along for the ride because the whole deal was they were like, well, if you marry her, then that'll keep, you know, Dr. Doom from being able to, you know, like, have her for the spell stuff or whatever that he's going to do.
Yeah, he's going to use some evil magic voodoo.
And Spider-Man's like, you know, I have a girlfriend. I really, you know, I've got stuff going on. I've got a life. And they're like, yeah, whatever, and they just go on. And then later when the girl gets pissed, you know, then they kind of explain, like, well, you can't just marry her. You have to bed
marry
her. You have
her.
To, like, consummate the marriage. Peter's like,
you know what I mean.
I have a girlfriend. Yeah, and then she was like, I wasn't going to sleep with him. Yeah, it was great. So it's a fun story, but it totally doesn't go, I mean, where I was expecting it to still, because I sort of expected this to be like a Deus Ex, you know, sort of deal where it's like, oh no, Sable's really okay. I didn't really get to that point, per se. I mean, you know, there's hints of something going on, but no indication that even Sable's okay. I mean, you know, so I'm kind of interested where this will pop up again, you know, story-wise. It's not like Silver Sable shows up a lot in
the
comics
there's
these
the vaguest suggestion that, I mean, like, Sable does not make some miraculous last page return or anything. There's the vaguest suggestion something might have survived.
Yeah, but that doesn't, you know, but like I said, it doesn't make that clear, so I don't know. I mean, they don't find Rhino, they don't find her, you know, so I don't know what's going on, and I don't know where the story is, you know where. But obviously, Slott is planting seeds because he's really good about doing that. So, so it'll be interesting to see where it ends up. But this is a very good read. I mean, like I said, I've not been I read like the first issue of Avenging, wasn't really excited about it, I dropped it, and picked this up for it. You know, maybe it's kind of fun. I don't see me buying more issues of it, but.
Zeb Wells is actually Ty Templeton wrote this, didn't he? Zeb Wells is the regular writer for Avenging, and he normally does a good line in Spidey. Ty Templeton's good too, though, and he and Slott work well together.
Yeah, so it's good. You ought to check it out, especially if you're reading Avenging. This is definitely a fun read for you.
It adds just a little extra bit of coda that I think does Ends of the Earth. Great story, no question. The ending wasn't quite there with the Ends of the Earth. There was no Spider Island, you know. This adds a little bit of coda that picks the end
it
of the
does.
Ends of
yeah,
Earth.
Yeah, because there is
bit.
And that is one thing that's important here, because there is a moment between Peter and Ox, so
Yeah.
So that's that is something.
Suck on that.
Yeah. So you know what? Suck it. Suck it, Trebek. But there's a good moment that's in that as well. And especially him again with some of the other Avengers. It's nice to see Peter, you know, like really in, you know, really fully in like the midst with the Avengers and stuff. That, you know, I don't know why, but I still got a kick out of that. Even though I know that's been around for a while. But anyway. All right. So there you go. There's your two. Comedian, maybe. And Avenging Spider-Man definitely picked that one up. So, all right. Chris, what you got?
Well, I think I have to take a moment to just mention Avengers versus X-Men number 6 this week.
Yes.
For being better than the previous 5 issues put together.
Allow me to explain that for you real quick.
Really?
If you look on the left bottom side,
there's
a name on here and it says Hickman.
Yeah.
And
Hickman has written an issue previously.
Yeah, that did happen. But when you're talking about actually story things happening, you know.
Because the simple fact is that this issue is the first one which is not a backdrop upon which fights are played.
Yeah, it's not people punching each other in the face. Yeah. It was crazy.
I mean, it's not like the events of issues 1 to 5 could have been told in one issue or anything. There were certain beats that we had to get through. But across 1 to 5, there was a lot of dithering. and the introduction of assorted fancy foreign locales, the Savage Land, Latveria, wherever else they went, I already don't remember, so that, you know, the tie-in books could have fun situational, the moon could have fun situational fights, you know. And I would say maybe you could have condensed it down to two or three issues, you know, you couldn't get it all down into one. But then this one, and now this issue as well, this is like, what is it? It's like 36 pages as well. So it's almost double size for no extra money. For same as the first issue was double size like that as well. So there's a lot of stuff, you know, a lot of paper for your buck here. Mm-hmm. And it just shows us what's happened. It's 11 days after the end of the previous issue, whenever Magic, Colossus, Namor, Emma Frost, and Cyclops all received the power of the Phoenix. And it turns out they've gone all Miracle Man on the world.
Yeah.
They are trying to, it is one of those stories where not a supervillain, but a superhero decides to use the power that they have to actually make the world a notional better place. And there's no downside to anything they're doing, you know. So, I mean, but it's the Phoenix. And we all know what's going to happen. Cyclops has been a massive douche for the last couple of years. It's not going to end well. And amazingly enough, like, amongst the various things that happen, you know, is that in addition to just doing things like setting up massive farms to feed the world and cleaning the oceans and creating, like, new sources of energy, like, they do start disassembling Eve. You know, it's very much off the heels of Superman and the Elite that we were talking about last week. You know, we see them disassembling world armaments and just, you know, they're escalation begins to happen, and this is the great concern, because the Phoenix cannot be sated. And Wolverine in particular knows this, and the Avengers know that this is the inevitable outcome, and while everything might look kind of rosy now, they know hope is still the key, so they go to get hope. And the Scarlet Witch plops into the story as well, and that's cool, because we are definitely into the beginning of Act Tuna. And amazingly enough, the story I was bitching about last week, the weird story going on over in New Avengers, where we're dealing with, like, a previous host of the Phoenix who was also an Iron Fist, here it is, it comes
hey,
up.
I know, I was like, wow.
It incorporated it into the main story, and it's going to be a thing, apparently.
Yeah, I was so very impressed by that, actually. So I was like, hey, I know that that's a thing, cool,
yeah. Yeah, heard about it, yeah. And that story also wrapped up in New Avengers this week, too. So that was a little three-parter, which is quite a good story as well. A little good press for Spidey. And Bendis is flexing his Spidey muscle lately. Spidey gets some good role in that story at the end. It's for a series that has up until now been purely about punching and has really set any kind of moral issue of the conflict aside and just presented it as being they're right, they're wrong, you know. As much as the Avengers have been presented as the aggressors, the Phoenix has been destroying planets. The Avengers are really in the right here, you know. I mean, they're probably a slightly less dickish way to go about it, but if they would sit down and talk about it, you know. Yeah. But it's all just been punching up until now. So for this you know, Miracle Man, I can't, Miracle, there's no comparing it to anything else, you know, to suddenly come in like this, and it's just, I just totally blindsided me. I wasn't expecting it at all.
I mean, from the first page, you're in a different world, you know, in this book, for this part of it, anyway.
Professor X returns to Utopia, but he knows that they're like, Scott, people are afraid. And it's like, yeah, I'm talking with fiery speech bubbles. That's how you know I'm good. I mean, in Cyclops, you know, Hope notes that the Phoenix is even still calling to her now. You know, she can feel the lure of its power, and Cyclops offers it to her, and she says that he asks, if I offered it now, would you take it? And she admits that she would. And they go, I can't have it.
No, I mean, the last line of it is a little awesome and cheesy all at the same time.
It is.
I mean,
oh, are you gonna tell something?
No, but it is. I will say that it's both.
Will you tell me after the show?
Yeah, I'll tell you after the show. Yeah, but okay. It's both like.
Well, actually, no. Hang on. There's no point in hiding this because it's been all over the promotional material.
Okay, that's fine.
They've put it in adverts. It's Cyclops says no more Avengers.
Yeah, and so it's, It's kind of cool because it's kind of like, oh, I see what you did there, but it's also kind of like, oh, I see what you did.
Yeah, yeah.
But you know what? They all came together for the wedding for Astonishing X-Men. They all came together.
That was like the same time whenever Iron Man and Captain America both went to Black Panther's wedding in the middle of Civil War, and it was like, you couldn't schedule this any better. Really?
Yeah.
You couldn't just put a little footnote that says this occurs before X.
Yeah, that would have been nice.
Because everyone was so happy at the wedding.
Yeah. nice.
So I'm just really happy to see Wanda's involvement in the story as well, because I've been actively looking forward to the Scarlet Witch getting involved in the story.
I love.
And she also gives us the look that, you know, the Phoenix is not untouchable, you know, and that's going to press Cyclops and the Phoenix Five, as they're calling themselves, into more of a corner, I think.
I like this sort of vision that she had as well, this premonition. Just because it sort of had like the original Avengers team assembled on it, and so I thought that the imagery was nice in terms of it. I think that was an interesting way to illustrate the point that they were trying to make.
Just speaking of illustration, actually, I should point out that this issue is drawn by Olivier Coipel,
mm-hmm.
who did House of M, most people probably know him from, and the Straczynski Store was his as well. The first five issues were by Romita Jr. I'm not sure how many issues Coipel is going to draw, but a pleasure to look at his artwork, so I'll take as many as he's willing to do.
Yeah, this looked really good. I noticed that there was a distinct lack of sketchy lines.
Oh, he's always very tight. I mean, his Beast actually is the coolest I've seen the Beast looking.
Oh,
in
man!
Years.
And, yeah,
Beast, I mean, I don't have a problem with Cat Beast. Some people still do. I never did. I mean, look, but he looks like great.
Yeah,
you know?
It's really good. No, this is a very detailed art style. You know, it's really good. And I like there was like one point in here that I like that doesn't end up getting pointed out. I guess it's why they don't end up using Black Panther as much, because there's a whole point they're like, all right, we're going to go in there and we're going to get Hope. And Black Panther's like, except me. I can't. I got a diplomatic thing. No. Y'all have fun with that, though. I'm going to be over here.
easily better than the first five put together. And if you are... If you've been put off by this, I would almost recommend you could probably grab issue 6 and see what you think.
Yeah, I mean,
and try picking it up for the second half. It's worth a look. It's just genuinely, it's very good.
For as much as the other stuff was just punching in the face, this is actual story things happening.
It's not like there's not a fight in this. No. There is at the end, but it's in the purpose of the story. It's not there to just serve as a background to spread tie-ins out over. I mean, there's at one stage. It seems like there's going to be a fight between Colossus and Iron Fist's team, and they don't have a fight.
That was the craziest thing. It was like, hey, this is a not fight.
Let's not fight. You know, they sat down and talked with the bad guys who were causing the ruckus that had brought them both there to the same place. I wonder also what the Phoenix confessing him means for Colossus's connection to the Sidorak.
You know, you know, I always heard that you couldn't have comics where people, like, sit down and talk things out because that would be boring. And I always wondered, like, really? And then it happened in this book, and I was like, yeah, that was boring. that was definitely not the most exciting part of the comic. Like, they sat around and talked it out. I'm like, oh, well, yeah, that wasn't that cool.
Sticking with the AVX theme as well, my second book for this week is going to be Avengers Academy, which I haven't talked about in a while, but this issue was, like, super great. Really enjoyed this issue. This is by the regular writer, Christos Gage, with art by new penciler, Timothy Green. And, you know, a large part of my love for this is the fact that it is a Justin and his Sentinel-centric story. Now, I really enjoyed the original Justin series. He had a series launched during the same time as Runaways, went to 12 issues, and they had a follow-up miniseries. And it's just about a kid who finds a discarded Sentinel and programs it to work for him. You know, it doesn't have a personality, much, despite what Justin claims. It doesn't actually have like a personality or any sentience or anything. It just does what it's programmed to do. But he's become very attached to the Sentinel, and now here he joined. I mean, I plotzed whenever he turned up in the double page spread of new students at Avengers Academy, like whatever that was, nearly a year ago. And he's been floating around on the fringes, and the Sentinel's been good for comedy, as it's just prone to shouting, "Destroy all mutants!" at the most inopportune of moments. But the central twist of this is that X-23 doesn't want the Sentinel to be there anymore. She insists that he shut it down, or she'll destroy it, you know. And Justin's... It's like a super burn. She's insists, because of course she's a mutant, and she, these are things that have been programmed to hunt and destroy. And Justin insists, you know, that he's reprogrammed, that he can't. What does it say, Sentinel? What is your prime directive? Unit will not abandon Justin. Continue listing all directives. Protect Justin. Preserve and protect all life. Do not harm living beings except to project Justin, self or other living beings. Defend self. Preserve self. Destroy all mutants.
Well, there it is. Way down at the bottom.
All Justin's been able to do is plant directives that override it. And this isn't good enough for X-23, because, you know, it's a programmed killing machine. You know, he's my friend, and X-23 returns, "It's a machine programmed to kill." And Justin goes, "So are you." It's like, bitch, no way. You only went there. You have no defense. And it's so wonderfully... I'd never even thought about it before. He just seemed like a random choice from just like a lesser-used teen character to put into the book. But it's as he says here, Avengers Academy is where you don't get punished for what you might do wrong, because bad people stack the odds against you. And it's like, wow, I would never have even thought of putting the twist on the Sentinel like that to incorporate him so tightly into the premise of Avengers Academy. Yeah. Or pitting him against... X-23, I mean, Mutant versus Sentinel, the idea is there, but I never would have thought of putting that twist on it, events kind of unfold in the expected manner after that. As part of their Protecting the World initiative, Emma Frost in particular has been going around destroying all Sentinels, and she comes to the Academy to destroy Justin's Sentinel, but because she is a Phoenix and an Omega threat level, destroy all mutants overrides all other directives, and the Sentinel promptly attacks. And, you know, things play out as you would expect from there. X-23 learns her lesson, the Sentinel, yeah. Things end on... but then things escalate maybe to a point I wasn't quite expecting them to escalate to, but...
Yeah, I think this is another example, though, and you've said this about Gage before, and we've talked about it on the show.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, Gage
taking
is
a crossover and using it to actually further the emotional journeys of his character.
Mm-hmm.
Like, always, he is consistently able to winkle out of whatever the premise of a crossover that he is involved with, something, some way that it deeply reflects on some member of his cast that he can pull forward and sculpt a whole story out of. And we've just prior to this, we had a three-parter where the New Mutants, or not the New Mutants, but, you know, the young mutants that were left over after Utopia was abandoned by the X-Men, or, you know, taken into custody by the Avengers and sent to the Academy to be supervised, not kept prisoner. And it didn't go over so well, you know. But X-23 has been at the heart of the book for the last couple of issues, but naturally, because, you know, she is the one character in particular in these books that straddles both sides. But there's been loads of great character moments across that storyline, and I never expected Justin and his Sentinel simply to take center stage like this, and that maybe gives me like a disproportionate amount of love for this particular issue. But I think it's maybe a two-parter or a three-parter, you know.
Yeah, it says it's at least first part of, what was the title?
At least part one, it's on a cliffhanger, you know, but it's like really, really, like, you know, good.
Well, and not even that, I mean, to take the X-23 backstory bit too, which is just like effing dark.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
She is the Sentinel, and she is Justin as well. Like that's why she's as tortured as she is, because she can't put herself. She's gone through so much terrible shit in her life that she can put herself in the shoes of both Sentinel and Justin.
Yeah.
So it's not surprising that the turn that happens later in the story happens. You know.
Yeah.
I mean, after the friendship she's formed with Finesse over the last three issues in particular has been just great stuff. Again, where these are two characters who just don't really understand emotion very well and are trying to because of her, the way she is, just like what's the medical term? She's got a medical condition. I forget the name for it. And X-23 has unfortunately been bred that way, had it bit out of her. But it's like they formed such a remarkably genuine friendship by understanding each other so well by not understanding. These are like X-23 might have just wound up in this book because her book was being canceled. That's not true though, because we know Gage didn't know her book was being canceled when she was incorporated into the title. But it's just such another great example of taking a premise and just finding it's just something he does really, really well, and AVX has proved no exception. So Avengers Academy, even though we haven't talked about it for a while, is not a book to be overlooking. This issue is no exception.
And the art in here is pretty good, but I do feel a little naughty looking at Emma Frost. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, well, that's not...
when are you not supposed to?
I'm just kidding.
Emma Frost.
Well, I mean, her costumes have been revealing. I'm not going to say that. But this one in particular, I mean, right around the midsection, lower midsection, there's just not a lot there. And it's a little... It's not like Saga bad, you know, but...
Oh, well, let's talk about Saga, shall we?
I guess we might as good enough segue as any.
Yeah, we're up to them.
So, whoo, man. All right, kids, this is definitely the X-rated version.
And all children out of the room.
If you are not like 21, or if you have any decency, you should not listen to this part. if you have any kind of reservation, all right, here we go.
Like any kind.
Any kind whatsoever.
Yeah.
Like if you think that, I mean, if you have boundaries, we're going to blow past those.
Well, let's get to it.
So, go ahead. Why don't you go ahead and take us through this.
Okay, well, this issue is predominantly about the Will, who we learned an issue or two back was heading off to the planet Sextillion in order to blow the first half of his paycheck for the job of hunting down Margo and Alana on horse, because he found out the Stalk was on their trail and that she would almost assuredly finish the job. So, he arrives on Sextillion and is greeted by a pair of giant heads on legs. It's the first page is a splash page, giant heads, fishnet just attached to a pair of fishnet stockinged legs and heels. And you're like, I see what's going on here.
This gives a whole new meaning to getting head. Let's really? Just say
wow.
That.
And Nicole just started us off, kids.
There's the, like they probably have the essential organs under their chins there as well. And I'm like, yeah, you pretty much got everything you need there. That's the sort of planet this is, I guess. It almost sets you off on the wrong foot for the story, you know.
Almost.
Yeah.
They fix that, though.
You think you know where this planet's going, and it's a fairly amusing sort of opening where the Will arrives, and the lying cat has to stay in long-term parking, and he can't bring any of his weapons down.
I love lying cat.
Lying cat is fantastic. The character find of the year, along with Boy Chimney, you know.
I want a lying cat.
Lion Cat obviously wanted to go down and get some himself, but he's not allowed down on the planet for whatever reason. And as he's slinking back to the ship, the Will shouts, you know, don't be like that. You would have had a lousy time anyway. Lying.
I love all the different expressions they have for Lion Cat.
I know. I guess I'll just go... really, the meat of this story is the Will story, so I'll just go over Marco and Alana's story first, which is that they've made it with the help of... What was her name? Elizabeth? Eliza?
Yeah, I think it's... Yeah.
forgotten her name. Hang on. What was her name? I forgot her name. Isabel.
Isabel. There we go.
Yes, the ghost girl who helped. She's helped guide them to the top of the mountain where the snow Marco needs for the healing spell to save himself from his wound is plentiful. And Marco recovers, and Alana insists that he tell her about Gwendolyn, which was the last thing he said before passing out. It turns out she was his fiancée. That didn't go so well. He was engaged to her before he got shipped off, and he'd already grown apart from her. And it turns out that like the engagement ring or the wedding ring was hers, and Alana's not too happy about that. But I love the fact that they just sling in here as well. You give me another woman's wedding ring. Actually, they belong to Gwendolyn's grandparents. They spoke two different dialects, so they had their rings enchanted with a translator spell. And it's like, okay, that'll do for any potential explanation required.
Yeah.
Planetary languages.
Although I think the gem line of here is when like Isabel is trying to give advice saying that you just had a baby, your hormones are all over the place, and she's like, you know, I'm not going to take advice from a dead girl without a vagina.
But then she comes back.
Yeah, she's like, well, and you were supposed to switch boobs like 10 minutes ago, so she's breastfeeding at the time. It was just like, wow.
And that they said they basically settle their argument, sleep through the night, and then when they wake up in the morning, they have been found. And Marco unsheathes the sword he said he never would in order to fight. So it looks like Marco might actually get to do something next issue.
Yay! Yep. That'll be fun.
And that's all well and good, but the real... the reason anybody want to be talking about this issue is what the whale gets up to, or rather doesn't, on Sextillion.
Oh, God.
It's really hard. You know, like, okay, all joking aside, yikes.
Wow.
It is, not massively detailed, but entirely explicit sexual activity going on all around him. Yeah. Lesbian angels just doing all sorts of things. You know, there's a panel of full-on penetration right here.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's off in the background, and there's no distance, and there's nothing especially arousing about it, but you can see it going in. It's right there.
What if it's a stuffed dinosaur with a full-on erection?
Well, I mean, the penetration in question does appear to be a guy in a fursuit, you know? The dog just strolling along through the city streets as the most wanton displays of vile creatures, like centipede-like bodies and sort of slug hippo women and all sorts of...
A man sort of human pyramid being whipped by a...
Clown?
Clown thing?
Yeah. But we'll find this all a little bit safe.
Wow. And that's the point where you're like, really?
And some like thin-eared guy, a real carnival barker, snake oil salesman type kind of guy, cane and everything, strolls up to him. Not quite what you were expecting, huh? he's got...
See what you did there.
Oh my
that
gosh,
awesome.
You putting the voice to that.
No.
Roll up. No offense, I can see what your last bitch did to you. It's all over your face. My brother, let me guess. When she a strong woman, I got what you need. Only $99.99. That sort of, fast talking salesman kind of. We're going to take him down into the depths of the planet and show him. And the fact of it is, like, that's the first bit, like. And. It's like it's really shocking imagery, but it's not like it's all comedic imagery, you know? It's explicit, but it's not intended to arouse the viewer, you know?
No.
It's like it's just more intended to sort of shock. It's like, how are they getting away with this? It's sort of supposed to be the reaction. It was like, oh my god, can you do this? That seems to me as like what you're supposed to think out of it, you know? And it's like, if this is safe, like what kind of beast is this guy going to present to him? And they go down, and he takes him down into his leather padded couch room, and he needs what he's brought to, well, because we know that the will and the stalk had a thing. So this guy has offered a completely submissive, a slave girl for him. And, you know, so you get to the thing, you get the pages, and it's like, you know, you decent in there? Anything but. I taught her to say that. And he opens the door. And now I personally, like, expect to turn the page, and I was expecting to see something that looked like the stalk. You know, just like to put the, like, the humorous capstone on the whole thing. It's like,
yeah.
He passed up all that crazy, outrageous stuff. It's like, you expect it to go to a more outrageous pace.
Uh-huh.
You turn the page.
And you're like,
oh, wow.
Yeah.
Your heart just sinks. You're just like, I really just needed to put this down for a second. I'm like, when it came to this page, I'm like, okay, I've got to just remember this is just a comic. But it still hits you. It still hits your heart.
There's no point in not telling this, but you turn the page and it's a 6-year-old girl. And, you know, I mean, I just went, I had the page in my hand and I was like, oh, God, what is he got?
Oh, no.
I just sort of set the comic and just moved back from it a little bit. You know,
exactly.
I was like,
exactly.
You know, and you know, and then, you know, she, you know, how old is she? I'm 6 and I'll do anything you want.
Oh,
it just gives you chills.
Oh,
just,
man, I know.
You get bile in your mouth from those that sentence. You're like, oh.
And then the will places his hands on either side of the salesman's head and crushes his head, just kills him outright.
And that's when you start clapping, like, oh god.
Yeah.
But the final narration from Hazel, you know, is the will wasn't the first bounty hunter to come after my parents, and he wasn't the last. Like every other freelancer I had the misfortune to meet, he was a fucking monster. But as my family was about to learn, some monsters are worse than others. Oh my god.
Wow.
I was, it's like your brain sort of has to catch up to this comic.
Yeah.
This might as well be a different series from the last 3 issues that we've had, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. I mean, first of all, like, you're shocked at the explicitness of the imagery throughout. And even though it's all done, like, just for humor's sake, like, that alone, I could easily see any number of people deciding not to pick up any more issues of this series after that.
The
closest we got to this was the kind of the funny robot sex thing in the first.
I don't even know that it's comedic, but it's definitely presented in a way that's very normal.
Yeah, outrageous and not.
I mean, it's
taken seriously.
Well,
you know?
It's not. I guess what I'm saying is like
casual.
It's not like Batman and Catwoman having sex on a rooftop, you know, where it's like these perfect bodies and proportions and things. But it's also not, like, really crazy outrageous. It's normal-looking people having an orgy.
Yeah.
You know?
It's
and
not sexual.
And it does end up kind of being non-sexual in that way. I mean, there's hairy people. You know, if you're talking about, like, some of these, like, odd sexual scenes, I mean, there's hairy people. There's, you know, fat people, skinny people. You know, any kind of person that you would think of. So it's not... It's just normal in that way. I mean, even though they're very graphic and explicit, they're not what you expect to see in comics, for sure. But I don't think that there's anything that's particularly comedic outrageous, which I think is what makes it seem that way. Because it's not what you expect to see in a comic. In the comics, you expect to see that exaggerated reality, the huge breasts, the perfect ass, and all that stuff. You don't expect to see sex acts depicted on a page with people looking fairly regular, you know, and so I think that's probably what makes it more shocking in that way.
It's like it seems designed to shock in some capacity, but not to. It's not just. Well, I mean, it's like I was gonna say not to morally outrage, but I can see people being offended by this. You know, that is not. It is not. It's not intended to titillate, though.
No, well, I don't think arousal.
It's not intended to titillate.
Yeah, you know? I don't think that arousal is the point
at
all.
And certainly the way the will just goes past and it's all like as rote, you know, they might as well have price tags stuck to them for all that it matters. You know, he's just browsing, you know. But what it, you know, whatever way you want to read it. And I mean, I could certainly see people saying, right, no more Saga for me after that alone. And I was feeling a little uncomfortable even as I was reading this through the sheer, just like the art, it's like, really, can you do this? Okay. This was not the comic I thought I was buying, you know, uncomfortable simply because I was taken off guard by it. Not because I'm prudish or anything, you know, but yeah. Simply because I was taken off guard by the level of content, you know. But you get a couple of pages of it and you're like, okay, you know. But what it really does with its sheer explicitness and just like outrageous and unexpectedness, because you know you get your weird heads and legs at the start, and you think, okay, I mean, my first assumption was this is a planet of these creatures because their heads, crotches, and mouths.
Right. Yeah.
And I'm thinking like, okay, I can see why a race that's built like that would turn themselves into a sex planet. You know.
yeah.
That was where I started out with the issue, and then we see just how much else is going on. But whatever all else it does. It really, really lulls you into a false sense of security.
Mm-hmm.
Like, escalation is the name of the game. Visual escalation and the sheer, like, how much more audacious can it get? And then you turn the page and it's a perfectly ordinary-looking child. And it is simultaneously the biggest escalation possible to the levels of ultimate wrongness and dialing it back to something so monstrously normal in the real world. Mm-hmm. Again, it's another one of those things where a real world issue is being blended in.
Right, because this gets into like the topic of human trafficking and all the kinds of things that we're seeing, you know, that are big topics right now.
And I mean, it completely threw me, you know. And yeah, the whale kills the guy, but it's like, you know, it's like even as his head's being crushed, the salesman says, "You're a freelancer, you murder children," you know, and it's like, I don't know what to feel, you know, and yeah. The whole issue like really disarmed me. And it was only after I like set it down and reflected on it that I realized like how good it is, like how smart it is and how much it manipulates you as a reader, not in a bad way, but just like how it manipulates you into a certain train of thought to then completely derail you at the last minute.
Well, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No.
I think that, because in that sense, it's sort of a juxtaposition. It's like, which is worse? Which is the more sickening thing?
Yeah, exactly. It's you like know? You could see a load exactly. of Bible Belt types going, "Oh, look, there's a penis." Oh, hard.
Right.
I put the comic down. You
it's
know?
Like if you were offended, if you're offended by all of the sex acts that are in the beginning of this book, and that is the thing that you focus on,
yeah.
then you are a sick fuck. You
it
are a
like
sick, sick fuck.
You've got
fuck.
Explicit depictions of the most twisted stuff going on, and then you have nothing more explicit than a fully dressed child simply standing there, and that is the more shocking and disarming
yeah.
and off-putting image. Like, that's how smart this comic is
yeah.
to really play with your head.
And
like
if
that.
And that's why I'm saying, though, I mean, seriously, if I hear anybody bitch about this comic and they complain about the sex acts in the beginning
oh.
and they are not appalled
they are
by the child,
the wrong,
then,
yes, yeah.
then they are, I mean, that is just evident of how fucked up they are. Because what's
yeah.
wrong with this and what's being put forward is this, you know, exactly what's being talked about here, the human trafficking, you know, child sex acts. I mean, that is what is awful. And that
I mean,
is what
nothing
needs,
is
you know.
Nothing that this girl has done or is going to do is described. Nothing salacious is presented with her. The whale immediately kills the guy as soon as he sees this. You're supposed to be on his side. I mean, he's still the bad guy of the series,
yes.
but like it's already cast him in a whole different shade that you don't even know what's gonna happen there. But this is and so you could see a Bible Belt type, you know, being like, this is shocking, but at least the girl is saved and the situation is resolved and, you know, it's no worse than something you might see on a primetime drama. So if they're going to, like, turn around and then focus, this is all hypotheticals, of course, but you could really imagine somebody looking at that as being like, oh, that's primetime drama stuff, you know, you see that on television, it's distasteful, it's immensely distasteful, it's hideous, but you don't see anything, nothing happens, it's all dealt with in such vagueness that it's all up here. It's all in the head. Anything you imagine is all up there. And if they get hung up then instead on the page of armored lesbian angels eating each other out, it's like, that's really not the issue, kids.
Right. Yeah. You have gotten hung up on the wrong thing. Wrong thing. So, man, yeah. That's a good litmus test. I think this is a good litmus test book for how screwed up in the head you are.
I mean, it really does. It completely, it does. I mean, I think that a lot of people will be seriously considering whether or not to pick up the next issue of this, because we've seen nothing like this in the book this far. And if they can go to a place like this, this early, it makes you wonder, like, what could be down the line waiting to leap out at us at any minute? Like,
you got to remember the controversy that started out before this first issue came out.
Just with the breastfeeding thing. I mean, I think controversy is...
Holy crap, like, you look at the first four issues of this comic and it's like, chick with her knocker out feeding a child, child sex ring. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think too, it's like, again, let's focus on, are you focusing on the wrong thing? A woman breastfeeding versus, you know, a child, you know, let's focus on the right thing here, people. You know, breastfeeding a child is a normal, natural, beautiful act. People fucking is a natural, beautiful act.
Well, I don't know much about beautiful in the context.
Well,
of this.
But I mean, it's a fun thing anyway. But
in the ten arms.
Hey, you know, if you need more breasts, but juxtapose that to things that are really wrong and are real world wrong things, like children being. I mean, here in the States, we're in the process of putting Sandusky away because he, you know, fondled boys. So, you know, this is a real thing that happens, and it's a real horrible thing that happens. There are real horrible things that happen to people in the world. Fucking and feeding babies is the least of those horrible things that happen in our world.
I mean, I imagine that a critic of the book could contest that this pulls them out of the fantasy sci-fi setting of the book, because it is one of the most explicit anvil drops of a real world concept versus some of the more casual jokes about, like, you know, the alien version of circumcision or whatever, like a little gags like that we've had. But I would think that this is still very much in keeping with the general real world and sci-fi that Vaughn is doing.
I mean, look at Isabella. I mean, we talk about Isabella. I mean, let's not forget that this is a girl that died due to, stepping on a landmine. This book is using crazy, outrageous things in a unexpected space world to make comment and discussion about things that are happening in our world. This is true good science fiction in that way, in that it's trying to comment on things that are really happening, that are really part of our world. And if you're getting caught up on things that are happening within the book and feel like you're getting taken out of it, I think you're missing the forest for the trees. You know,
I mean, that's just a hypothetical criticism I could see being levied at it. But I've just deliberately not chosen not to go and see what people are saying about this, because I don't want to, you know, there's really meaty review material in here, but I think I'm going to try and put the context of it out of my mind going forward, you know?
Yeah.
I haven't seen anybody reacting to it and just being really off put by, like, the visible. I do remember, like, in somebody commenting that they were really put off by the robot sex in the first issue, because it just wasn't, you know, the book wasn't marketed in that way. They didn't know they were going to get that going in, and that's fair enough. You know, you didn't know that was going to be there. That's fair enough. Yeah. And I'm like, geez, I wonder what a person like that would think about this issue. And then to just have they've got their objection all nicely lined up. But they've got their outrage in a nice, neat little pocket, and then have it just whipped out from underneath them. And it's like, massively.
If someone was to read this issue and they stopped reading the series, I probably wouldn't blame him because it is really heavy.
Yeah.
Well, if they stop reading it because, I mean, it's different. Okay. It depends on why and why I would be, why I would feel frustrated. If you read this and you're like, I just can't handle the reality of thinking about children being subjected to that.
Exactly.
Then I can be like, okay, I can kind of get that. But that's not going to be, I think, a majority of people's objection. You know, I think a good number of people are going to read this and be like, oh my God, people were having sex.
Yeah.
No.
Really? You know?
I mean, it's just sort of indicative of the same sort of imbalance in morality that says grotesque violence is okay and depictions of sex are not, you know. And I think we all fall prey to that imbalance sometimes. Like, because I really wouldn't hold it against anybody if they thought that, you know, depictions of sexual acts and this level of explicitness is not something they want to read. I wouldn't actually hold it against them if they didn't want to pick up any more of the book like that. I mean, because ultimately, like, human trafficking and child pornography and that sort of stuff, like, that is primetime drama territory. You do see that with the same level of, or the same lack of explicitness that it is dealt with in this issue. And, you know, that is deemed okay, and the other thing is that, of course, it speaks to the disconnect between the way society morally views these two things. But, mm-hmm. like, personally, I wouldn't hold it against anybody for either or.
I may be using a little bit extreme. It's not that I, you know, would be like, you're a bastard, but I think I would challenge them and say, you know, I think that's the whole point of this book, is to challenge and say, you know, ask yourself the question, put it on the scales, you know, what's really worse? If you're worried about this thing more so than this thing, then, you know, why is that?
Maybe you want to just, you know, take a step back and look and ask yourself why that is.
Right. Exactly. So, and that may be more along the lines that I'm talking
about. I really had to do that. Like, I was like, oh. I mean, I just actually said out loud, I turned the page and I was like, oh.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
And,
I just said, oh, no, out loud. And I was like, I didn't. You know, it was like, maybe if I'd been thinking. But it's like, as I'm saying, the book totally lulls you just very gently through the sheer bombastic nature of the imagery it throws at you. For all the bombast therein, it really is quite subtly shapes your thought, the direction of your thoughts as to what to expect when the page turns, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's like, in retrospect, I'm like, I probably should have seen that coming, to be honest.
Possibly, but, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it just says something about me that's not somewhere I would want my head to go, and it's not, so I don't go there, even if I was trying to think of what, if I was trying to think it was going to be a bad thing.
No.
But I was expecting something on a more humorous sort of side to, like, cap off the ridiculous nature of, mm-hmm. of the increasingly ridiculous and outrageous nature of the visuals that we'd been presented with. But, like, I would just sum it up as, like a really, like, craftily manipulative comic that really shapes the direction of your thoughts. And it was, as I say, it was only after I finished it and I just set it down and I thought back over it and I was like, wow, that was well crafted. Like, that tricked me. And it didn't, like, I could say some people might, but it didn't pull me out of the story. It sort of metaphorically knocked me over, but it was only when I thought about it afterwards that I realized just how well crafted it was and how deceptive or manipulative. They sound like bad words, but I don't mean them in a bad way.
Yeah, it's. I mean, in a story sense, I think it's a good thing, you know.
Yeah, but it doesn't.
Well,
it never.
Okay. I got a quick question. Now, when Saga first came out, it was supposed to be 5 issues, right? Was it a 5 issue thing?
I thought it was 6. But
so how are they going to clear this up in like 2 issues?
Well, it's an ongoing series.
I think it's an ongoing series.
Now,
yeah.
It's ongoing.
But,
okay.
Yeah, it's ongoing.
Yeah, so this is going to be. Yeah, so we got plenty of time.
But I love the way that right away, even though you're like. Yeah, if the will you hope this guy will die, like, immediately you hope this guy will die, and the will does it for you right away, and you're like, yes, wait, no, you're a murderer, and you're like, you kill innocent people too for money. You're you're not better than this guy. I don't know what to think.
Yeah, I know because I think it's asking those real world questions, because in comic world,
murder really worse than that? You know, where does it, you know?
But in the comic world, we're used to these nice, you know, semi-well-defined lines. I mean, even for the most, you know, anti-hero that you can find, there's usually somewhere in there some sort of line. And for reality, you know, people in reality, reality is reality, you know, and it is what it is, you know.
And
so,
I mean, you know, people, they're, you know, the comics, of course, like, increasingly over the years, people do make the claim that, you know, they don't want their comics to reflect reality and that they read them for the purposes of escapism. And, you know, that's true. But history has sort of borne out that the comics that engage the most and succeed the most are the ones that do present the real world through the prism of, of superheroes, or I should say the superhero comics that succeed the most are the ones that present their world and their characters as real people, and that these fantastical events happen to and happen around, but they're still quite, you know, seated in the real world.
And this is happening in sort of a space fantasy, which I think is an interesting equivalent way to do that. It's something that's not done very often, and it's, I mean, I just damn love this thing. I mean, you know.
I mean, if you go into this with a dark mindset, the idea of a sex planet, really? Like, if you're thinking, like, if the first thing you think is, like, what's the worst thing that could possibly on this sexy planet of the sex? It's like, you know, that's probably it. But again, because the sex planet is you're introduced to it with these weird cartoon heads on pencil legs, you're immediately, you know, led down a certain tunnel of thought that does not come out where this comic comes out.
Yeah.
And
because I actually text JD before. I'm like, you gotta watch out for Saga, remember?
Yeah, and it, you know, and yeah, it does kind of grab you. But I mean, of all of the things, like I said, I think that last bit was the bit that was like, oh, wow.
Yeah.
You know? And like you said, it sort of happens, and then you have to process it after it happens.
But it does. It takes a while. It takes you, you're just like, oh.
Yeah.
I need to stop and decide what I feel about this.
Yeah.
You know, and that's, you know, and in many ways, like, that can be the most interesting read of all, because it makes you stop and it makes you ask a question.
And to tell you the truth, I wouldn't be surprised if some people didn't even finish the comic after they turned that page.
Which is too bad. I mean, because they definitely missed out.
Lost,
you know?
Well, no, I'm just saying.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very...
I wouldn't hold it against them.
I wouldn't either, because it's... It hits you in a place you don't want to be hit.
I know too many. I mean, too many artsy people.
We've kind of talked about this before, but comics are a very, you know, liberal medium. Primarily liberal creators. Just the liberal mindset just seems to lead itself more to creativity. But like, this is not like a liberal issue.
No,
like this is not one of those things where it's like, you know, but you know, it's like, I don't know. You know, there was a gay wedding issue out this month, and I know which comic shocked me more.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
The gay wedding. What was that? Everyone was happy and it was fun and everyone lived happily ever after in that one. So
then Wolverine exploded.
That happened.
The kind of comic that was. You know, this is one that it's like different sides of issues are falling on here, and it's like it's one that's going to, you know, this will it dares to ask you the question. Is this a comic you want to keep reading? And that's pretty ballsy.
Yeah. Like,
never mind any of the moral issues or anything. Just in this strangled market with so little room for new stuff and all the good new stuff Images putting it out, only four issues in, Saga dares to ask you, this is, you know...
Are you sure?
Are you sure? Yeah. Because
we're going to go to some effed up places.
Yeah.
Are you sure? Because I got a feeling this is not going to get any better. You know,
yeah.
I mean... In
it's
terms
just,
of,
but the thing is, if you think about it, that's just one girl. How many other?
But this will never be touched on again. I mean, I think the feeling I have is like this is something that'll be commented on and not touched on again, because what we're seeing is different issues being touched on and moved on. But I think for the larger narrative, we're going to be dealing with this family, and we know from the future commentary that some really bad things are going to happen.
Yeah.
And you know, we can only imagine with this. What those are going to be. So, yeah, it's going to be a ride. I'm loving it, though. I mean, this is the kind of comics I like to read. It's like, if you want to point out, like, stuff that makes you think, stuff to ask questions, good stuff.
It's like,
you
know? I was so disarmed by it that when I got to the end of it, I didn't think I loved it. You know, I thought, oh, that's a very different issue. I'm not sure. But it's like, as I say, I thought about it, and I realized what the story had done to me.
Yeah.
You know, and to my head, and I thought, hang on a minute.
Yeah.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's good.
And that's, right. That's Saga.
That's Saga for you. So,
just
you know.
Just a wee brief chat about it there.
Check it out. I mean, like I said, and if for some reason.
But it's like, that sounds like something you'd be interested in reading, I mean, you know, the issue's not going to hold any surprises for you, so it won't have the same impact, but I don't think there was any discussing it without just going into the...
No, there's no way. I mean, you really have to go there.
What happened in the comic, you know?
Yeah.
It's hard to point at it and say, definitely check this out, because, like we said, not going to be for everybody. Not going to hold it against anybody who decided off the back of that that this went to places they weren't comfortable with and they didn't want to follow a writer or a series that was willing to go there. That's, you know, it's a book that makes you ask questions, yeah. Which was really surprising because none of the other issues did. And it's like, holy crap, is this the sort of level of deep thinking I'm going to have to be expected to on a monthly basis?
Let's hope so.
Fucking vodka on hand for future issues.
And again, this is one that you want to read it in the privates of your home, private of your home.
Yeah.
Don't read it on the bus. You know, that's where you start out and you're like, oh no, I can't believe it. Oh.
Oh.
You know, you do, you're just led through hoops and...
Yeah. Yeah. It's good. It's good.
Good so. Stuff, it's... though. Good stuff.
All right. Well, hey, we managed to fill an hour and a half show. I really was worried, and we managed to get there. So, well, that's it. That's the show then. So, thank my crew, Nicole, Kristen Feely. I have no idea when Chris Triplett will be back. We're thinking of him, so hopefully he'll be back very soon to be back with us. But otherwise, you should go to the website fanboyversus.com. You can get all of our past shows on there. Check us out on Twitter at fanboyvs. And you can follow our feed there. Follow along with the live show, and we do it every Sunday at 3 p.m. Central, 4 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. GMT time. So really late for those of you on the other side of the ocean. But hey, it's a good way to, you know, end off your weekend, we hope. So there you go. Awesome. Well, again, thank you for tuning in. Thank you for joining us. And please tune in next time when it'll be Fanboy versus...
something a bit.
This has been Fanboy Versus. Visit us at tfradio.net for show notes and to subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at TF Radio for news and updates. Like the podcast? Leave us feedback on iTunes. Copyright 2011 Radio Free Cybertron.